This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Welcome to the show and thanks for tuning in. The Milwaukee River was once a place into which humans feared to wade, but now people not only paddle in it, fish are beginning to once again flourish in its waters. One player in the river's renaissance concentrates its efforts upstream in Ozaukee County. Earlier this summer, WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz met up with a team working at the southern edge of Mequon at River Barn Park. An Ozaukee County Fish Passage team was about to carry out an electrofishing survey.
The summer sun had already added a sizzle to the morning air, as program manager Matt Aho explained the big-picture mission of the Fish Passage Program. It aims to connect good fish habitat along its stretch of the Milwaukee River and then simply allow nature to take its course. Aho says one strategy, a dramatic one, is dam removal.
In addition to that, we've reconstructed about 45 road and stream crossings that were also impediments to fish passage. Dams are kind of the obvious one. A fish simply can't get by a large dam on the main stem. A lot of times folks don't think that culverts or where road and streams meet can also be a barrier. Our native species that we're concerned with, particularly northern pike and walleye, aren't the best swimmers and jumpers. So if the culvert is too small, think of what happens when you put your thumb over the end of an open garden hose. The velocity will increase. Same thing, when a culvert is too small for the size of the stream, that velocity will increase and the fish can't get through.
Aho's audience seems keen to do more than talk about fish. They perk up when Aho's colleague, Luke Roffler, steps forward with instructions.
How many of you have done this before, whether with us or somebody else? Or... All right, cool.
A net in one hand and electrofishing wand, a long pole with a metal loop at the end, in the other. Roffler says human safety comes first.
Probably what you most want to learn about is how do we use this stuff to actually catch fish. So we've got the two boats. We've got three people out front for each boat, and we actually, when there's more room, we'll fan out quite a ways. There's about 25 feet of cord on each of these reels, and they do self-retract, so they won't be, like, you know, tangled up behind you for you to trip on or anything. So basically you're going to be clipped in behind your... on the straps on your waders, we're going to clip you in, and you're just going to kind of walk up the stream, and you're going to be panning back and forth, almost like you're at the beach with a metal detector or something like that. We're trying to net every fish we see out there, but we're not going to. There's no way. It's impossible. So we go for a representative sample. So what that means is cover a lot of area. Don't let anything scoot by if you can prevent it. But this whole back and forth and the boat itself, we'll be drifting back and forth, so the team as a whole will be kind of going like this.
Roffler and his colleagues mime the slow-mo they expect volunteers to mimic.
We're going to be walking a nice, slow, steady walking pace like you would walk down a trail or whatever. So no, you don't have to go nuts. You know, if you see a big fish in front of you, we don't expect you to dive in after it or anything like that. In fact, we encourage you not to. So like I said, the electricity in the water is the most obvious hazard for you out there, but probably not the one that's more likely to get you are any of the trips and slips, as we call them out there. So we have polarized glasses in that gray shopping bag over there. Those allow you to basically cut through the glare that's on the water. You'll see right to the bottom, essentially. Not only will you see the fish better, you'll see rocks, logs, anything else that might be in there that you might trip over.
While volunteers scatter to grab glasses and pull on waders, Roffler tells me this program started in 2009, after several years of preliminary planning.
This is our fifth of six so far, and then we do them all again in fall.
And how do you select your sites based on...
Well, we actually have three that are downstream of Cedar Creek.
That's a nagging EPA Superfund site north of here, where PCBs lurk.
So downstream of the main sediment contamination source for the watershed, and then three that are upstream. So sort of doing a comparison and contrast of contaminated and uncontaminated.
Okay. So this is made possible. You got a grant?
Right. This one is actually an EPA grant.
Okay.
So it's through Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and it's our monitoring grant. We also have one that is more of our bread and butter. It's what we call enhancing ecological productivity, and it's culvert replacements and wetland restoration, things like that.
Volunteer Kayla Clark is busy cinching up a pair of oversized waders. The West Bend High School senior says this outing was her stepdad's idea.
What the heck, fam? Might as well try it.
As for the instigator, 8th grade science teacher Brian Chizik can hardly contain his excitement.
I've wanted to do this since I was her age, you know, and I finally get to do it.
Luke Roffler signals for some heavy lifting, 2 6-by-3-foot boats. Actually, he calls them stream shockers, will be carefully carried down to the river. It takes 4 people to do the job.
There are little babies. We try not to, you know, they are field equipment, so they get a little rough and tumble, but, you know, as you can see, we try to keep good care of them.
Each contains a generator that powers the electrofishing devices and an aerated fish hold, essentially a deluxe cooler.
Try to split evenly as far as number of people per boat.
Safe and sound, boats and crews reach the river. The generators fire up, and the teams fan out across the knee-deep water. Per Roffler's instructions, each crew moves slowly and methodically. 3 people out front bearing probes and nets, their support team on the standby to net fish or lend a hand. They rouse an occasional common carp, nothing new to these waters, but manager Matt Aho says netting natives to see how they're faring is what it's about.
We haven't thrown any away. The only one we're not netting is carp, we know for sure. The little ones we're catching here is a lot of green sunfish, and I think there's a few pumpkin seeds, so they're kind of the cute ones, they're the real colorful ones.
But there's really nothing wrong with these.
After
guys.
A couple of hours of probing and netting, the crews pull on shore. Fish expert Luke Roffler perches on a bucket and methodically identifies, tags, and measures each fish.
You can kind of tell from its mouth. Looks like those aquarium suckers that you use to clean off the glass. But this is a red horse. Which
volunteers are treated to a free tutorial.
Mainly the large scales. A white sucker, which is our main sucker species, that have really small scales. These are big.
Fellow Ozaukee County worker
Tom Dupin, D-U-E-P-P-E-N,
stands alongside the river's edge. He'd love nothing more than to be down on the river mucking about, but says he couldn't be happier to see so many volunteers tending to the river.
Yeah, I've been working for the county for 12 years. It's really changed a lot. I mean, one of the major things I was first involved with was the removal of the Wabaka Dam.
That happened in 2003, long before Ozaukee's fish passage program launched.
People were irate for such a long time that, you know, this dam, you know, it's been here for so long. It needs to stay, and it's part of our tradition. And all of a sudden it was gone, and then all of a sudden they were so much happier. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't know the shoreline was green there, you know. And it's just like, oh, yeah, and the fish can actually get upstream and, you know, go to the next spot. Now that Newburgh's going to come out, they're going to have an open stretch going all the way up to West Bend now.
Since our conversation on the river, the Newburgh Dam removal was completed, and Luke Roffler reports that 109 fish, lots of forage species and small panfish, were identified that day. He says each session, the tromping about with zappers and nets, draws more people into caring about the river.
I mean, not even so much, like, not to toot our own horn or anything, but just so they know the stuff that's going on, you know, and the quality resource that they have here, you know. A lot of people, when you think Milwaukee River, you think, you know, downtown, all the sheet piling, the armored shorelines, big buildings, you know, no habitat, no fish, whatever, big shipping canal. But then all the way up here, it's the same exact river. And the fish basically use that as the highway to get up here. So there's good stuff going on up here by a lot of different groups, not just us. The resource is very good already, and it's getting better. So that's what we hope people notice more than anything, and even after we're gone. So
for Lake Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz produced our report on the Ozaukee Fish Passage Team, and while that particular event took place over the summer, there are still opportunities to get your waders wet. Next week, on October 8th and on the 11th, the Ozaukee Fish Passage Team will complete its autumnal round of electrofishing in the Milwaukee River, or if you'd rather stay dry, you can peer down under at the Mequon-Thiensville Fishway by way of its live underwater camera. There's more information about all of that at WUWM.com/Lake Effect. Coming up next in the program, our series on death and dying continues with a conversation with one of the final hour's volunteers. Lake Effect will return in just a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio.